CliffCentral.com.
I always love that song. Madonna, La Isla Bonita. It's just, it always makes me think of a holiday. And that that music is just holiday, holiday, holiday. Anytime you think of the beach, I can hear that song playing in the background. Okay, good morning. It is Thursday. We have much to do, many people to speak to today, and you are part of that conversation. You can always let us know what you think by giving us a shout. You can send us a message, a WhatsApp on 0797-482090. You can also get a hold of us on Webinar Jam if you're watching the show live on the internets. You can send us a message like Jackie just did. She said she loves Jane's insults. Please make them a permanent feature. This morning, The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's. As always, we check in once a week with all the most important stories that are going on all over South Africa and the world. We hopefully managed to do some incisive deep dives into some of the bigger, more ongoing economic and social political issues. But occasionally we also get wrapped up in, well, we can't help it, we're human, right? We sometimes get wrapped up in political nonsense like the Tea Party that Julius and Jacob had last week. We get talking about Joe Biden and how he's now signed 53 executive orders. He's been in office probably about, 14, 15 days? And he signed 53 executive orders, Pumi. That's not messing around. The guy is seriously, he's done more executive orders, I think, in the first couple of days of his presidency than most presidents do in their entire presidency. There's a picture of him I saw on the internet yesterday with each file represents an executive order and they're all on his desk. The pile is like almost as high as a human being right next to him. It's pretty incredible. Pums, I can't hear you. You're going to need to make sure you're unmuted. Sorry, Zoom call stuff.
I was saying, Matamela's had five funds. So, funds.
What are you talking about with him? What do you mean with Cyril?
You're saying Joe Biden and his executive orders? Cyril has done some work. He started all sorts of funds.
What you mean funds
gathering
for?
Gathering lots of money.
Oh, for himself,
yeah, like
for his
small business fund.
Oh, right. I'm with you. Sorry.
The most recent one is the tourism fund.
And what is happening with that money that is raised in these funds? Where does it go?
Who knows?
Oh, right. Okay.
Who knows?
Yeah, that makes me uncomfortable.
You, a small business owner, have you received any relief out of the small business fund that was? Oh, okay.
You? You've also got a small business.
What?
All right. The Burning Platform, we'll get into this and a whole lot more. Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's this week, as every week. And our guest this morning is Solly Mueng. And Solly is, of course, the founder of Don Valley Reputation Managers. He's a freelance writer. Pumi was just talking about a column of his that she read the other day. He's also the co-host of Solly and Gauta Uncut, which is on YouTube. It's a show where they discuss the country's socio-political and economic ecosystem, on whose balance we all depend. Absolutely. Solly, nice to have you on the show.
Switch on the camera.
Are you going to switch on your camera? hopefully you don't have a cat filter on, Solly.
Can you see me?
There we go. We can see you.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Very good. How are you guys? Good to see you again. Hi.
Very good. Solly, Pumi and I were just talking about you while we were waiting for you to join us.
Oh, God. Is it what you was loving that way?
No, it was a good thing.
No.
We weren't being mean at all. In fact, Pumi was saying she read one of your columns the other day. Maybe we should start there because it's the State of the Nation address tonight.
Okay. Is the line okay on my side?
Perfect. It's all good.
Okay.
We're good to go. So let's start off with the column you wrote. Pums, do you want to go into what you wanted to ask straight up?
Oh, it was very funny because you said if we thought Richard Quest was bad with this analysis of South Africa, 2021 is going to be worse.
Yes.
Used to love that view. We're 2 months into 2021. Is it really that bad?
Well, you know, I think South Africa was in a way saved by COVID. You know, we didn't have to send one of those big delegations in, you know, colorful scarves to Davos, because they go there every year. It's just, an annual trip people look forward to. But they had no story to tell over the past few years. And now they forget that when they get there, people are going to ask them serious questions about, so what are what story are you selling? Why do you want us to come and invest in your country? They had no answers to those things. And we saw it last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much what it is. And we don't have a better story this year than we would have had last year.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you refer to a good story to tell, which was always the ANC's tagline for a while. They came up with that as a way to explain that South Africa was moving forward, that there were things to be excited about, that we had a good story to tell. And now you're saying that the title of that should be No Story to Tell. And I'm worried that the State of the Nation address tonight is going to be a bit of a no story to tell, because the country's been on hold for a year. That's all there is that we can say about it, and that's something everybody already knows. We don't need to hear.
Well, the country has been on hold for a year, but actually for a lot longer than a year. We've been waiting for the Tumamina and whatever, you know, poetry that the president came into office with to turn into something tangible, and it hasn't, you know. So we COVID-19 has come in as a convenient excuse, as it were, to the president, to the ANC. They can all point all the fingers to it, but we know that our economy was already on its knees as we entered COVID-19. Soon after we went in, we were downgraded, not because of COVID-19, but because of our iniquities, as it were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's get into this, because Pumi, I just start smiling the minute anyone refers to something like Tumamina, and I know how you feel about those things. So let's begin with the State of the Nation address, which is scheduled for tonight. At least, as Sia mentioned earlier in the show, the cost of the State of the Nation this year round is going to be about 100,000 rand. Usually it costs well over 2 million rand just to put the whole thing together. We don't have to have all these MPs dressing up and trying to impress each other. Such a relief, because sometimes it's just very embarrassing. Apparently he's going to address 50 people or so in person. That's as many as we can accommodate into Parliament, with social distancing and all the rest of it. It's going to be very weird. And we have had regular updates from the president, thanks to COVID. We've seen him once every couple of weeks or months. So I'm just concerned about what exactly he is going to say or what he isn't going to say. But do you think anyone actually cares at this point? I don't mean to be extra salty this morning, but surely nobody gives a shit at this stage. Pums?
I think Ramaphosa is a very lucky president in that he's still seen by many people as the last hope. You know, they keep giving him a chance. He speaks well. He's not Zuma in his conduct and all that. And they think, no, man, he really wants to do the right thing for South Africa. It's just the ANC, you know. These people around him were making it hard for him. He's a nice guy, you know. Let's vote for him again, forgetting we voted for the ANC.
Do you?
So people keep giving him a chance. Sorry?
People have buyer's remorse now with Cyril Ramaphosa. People gave him a chance and he's failed to deliver. He's failed to deliver at every single turn.
Of course, he fails.
There've been no prosecutions. People thought he would come in, he'd stop the corruption. No, there's been no prosecutions. In fact, we saw more corruption.
He has not shown leadership in any way. I mean, as a leader of South Africa in these times, he has missed many opportunities to do that. Stop it, it's enough. You can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that. It's unacceptable. He doesn't do that.
And
he's
guys,
never done that, even when he could.
I agree with both of you, obviously, but there is also something else to this, which is that the guy had enormous stores of political capital and of goodwill at the beginning of his term. We'd come out of a very sticky situation, and Pumi and I have both been very careful not to assign all of the dirty and dark deeds of the last 10 years to Jacob Zuma, because they're not just on his plate. They're on all the ANC cadres' plates.
Of course.
But Cyril came in, and he could have done revolutionary things. He could have really caused massive ructions because he had an enormous amount of support at the beginning.
Right.
I mean, I'm not talking about by the thin margin that he won at Nasrec. I'm talking about the general public. And people would have supported him, and he would have had, thanks to COVID now, a lot of scope to really fire and hire and change things and restructure the ANC and make it a machine that could adapt itself better to the upcoming elections, to the upcoming political shenanigans that it's now dealing with internally and pretending everything's all right externally. But he wasted, he squandered all of that goodwill. And I think that's what people are annoyed about, because he had such an enormous reserve and he just wasted it.
Yeah, I think that's the most painful part of it. I think I'm not sure to what extent he appreciates the opportunities that he had. I mean, his brand name had been strong, as you described it. People believed it. I think there are still people who believe it, in it. I think South Africans are now caught between the other ANC and the, you know, sanitized ANC around Ramaphosa, but the fact is it's the same ANC. You know, Ramaphosa maybe knows that. I don't know if he does. I think he appreciates that many South Africans beyond the ANC would have stood behind him. And he said to Magashule, you can't bring that woman to parliament. As parliamentarians, they're supposed to be clearing their names in the courts of law first. You can't do that. Mm. But he hasn't done that.
It's not even ACE's doing. I was telling this to Gareth a couple of weeks ago, that there's a deployment committee within the ANC, and there is one member of that deployment committee. That one member is Cyril Matamela Ramaphosa. So he's got the power. He's got all of the power. But yesterday I was complaining about that very bizarre opinion piece that Jesse Duarte has got in the Daily Maverick.
Yeah.
I think I read it 5 times, and every time I read it, I kept thinking to myself, what is Jesse telling us? Is Jesse telling us that Cyril's ineptitude and reason for not doing anything, even though the entire South African population seems to want him to do something to root out the bad guys, as it were, is because he's part of this party and the party has decided that it is above what people, they actually represent what people want, and what people want is what they want. And then either way, it's very bizarre.
Well, Pumi, first of all, Cyril Ramaphosa is not the only person in the deployment committee. The SG plays a big role in that. That's why the SG was able to deploy people to parliament. Cyril should have put his foot down. He didn't. So it's not just one person who plays it. It's very important to know that.
Yeah, but Cyril is, as Pumi says, on some of those committees.
Yeah, but Cyril has not been a strong leader. He has not shown a backbone, and that's a problem. He's the Kulubans in the ANC, at least he's supposed to be, but he hasn't.
No.
Right? And I think now these other people, the Jesse Duartes of this world, the Magashules, and everybody else who's now navigating and coalescing around Zuma, they've seen that this man is weak. They can play him, and they are playing him. There's a painful thing about it for me and Cliff, is that they do it in public. I mean, you will remember the many times when Cyril would stand up and say one thing, the next day Magashule would stand up and say a totally different thing. You know, they don't respect him. And Sully, I don't know if you appreciate that these people do not respect him.
Sully, you just brought someone up, and I mentioned him in my rambling question just before. But Jacob Zuma is still very much in the political picture. And this meeting that he had with Julius over the weekend sparked a lot of conversation around him. Now, he was by no means good for the country. I don't want anyone to misinterpret what I'm about to say, but you know how people are. They like a headline. They don't like to get into the nuance of it. Now, you've just indicated something that makes probably the greatest distinction, the greatest contrast between Jacob Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa. You can fault Zuma for a lot of things, but he did have the ability to make the ANC come to heel. We all knew he was in charge of the ANC when he was president. And we also knew that he could get his will implemented fairly quickly, whether it was for good or for bad, and mostly it was for the latter. But if Zuma said something, it happened. And that was leadership. This idea of being this conciliatory negotiator, which, you know, that's been Cyril's moniker for most of his career, I don't know that that's helped, because the ANC doesn't respond well to that kind of leadership. What the ANC responds well to is someone putting their foot down and saying, you will.
Yeah.
And then everybody falls in line.
Yeah, Mandela did it. Even Thabo Mbeki did it.
Absolutely.
As you say, Zuma did it. It's a pity that he did it for the wrong reasons, but they all did it. So you have to do it. The thing is, when you are president of South Africa under the current, you know, system, you're also president of the ANC. Actually, you are president of the ANC first, because the ANC considers that it has deployed you to become president. So that's why they can pull you back whenever they want to. So every president in the current system has to wake up one day every day thinking, am I wearing my South African hat or am I wearing my ANC hat? But now we have a president who's constantly having to look over his shoulder. Even when he delivers a sonar to the 50 people tonight, he'll be looking over his shoulder, because he doesn't know what Magashule is going to say tomorrow. These guys, the more threatened they are by the prospects of arrest, the more dangerous they're going to be to South Africa and to the ANC. But you know what? I think that the rest of us should be more concerned about the ANC. I'm tired of looking at South Africa from the perspective of the ANC in the South Africa must come first. Whatever happens in the ANC, actually the ANC should leave power somehow. And sort out, maybe it needs to walk the wilderness a little bit and sort out its problems, maybe find its soul again, because right now it can't govern this country.
I don't mean to be rude, but you're speaking like those people who pray for Cyril, you know?
No, I don't pray for Cyril. I'm really disappointed.
I just want to hear what Pumi was going to say to you before I interrupted.
But even as you say that we're tired of looking at the country through the gaze of the ANC, the reality is that all of the other structures are not working. So right now, I'm extremely fascinated to see this Jacob Zuma thing play out, right?
Yeah.
Because truly, at this point, the person that needs to step up is, we now know he's defied a court order, which is against the law. The man must get arrested. This has nothing to do with the ANC. There's an entire structure. He must get arrested. He must be, you know what I'm saying? People have been outed. People have been outed at the Zondo Commission. We know that the commission is not a court. It's simply an airing out of, evidently, the ANC's dirty laundry. But it's the NPA and Shamila Batoi, whose job it now is to take all of this evidence that is put in front of the commission and put it into a court case and trial people. The police must arrest people. The courts must do their job. That has nothing to do with the ANC. But for whatever reason, all of these people are not doing their jobs because they are waiting for the ANC to say something or do something. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Pumi, for too many years, over 10 years or so the ANC under Zuma, or the diplomatic committee that we're referring to, put people in all those structures whose job it is to second guess the chief, you know. So we might have Ramaphosa in power, but a lot of those bad guys are still in the NPA, in the police. I mean, the police report to, and the Hawks report to Qhele. Qhele is not one who will push for justice against his comrade. I don't trust this man, okay? The NPA has to work with the Hawks, with the SAPS. I don't know. Shamila Batoi is quiet now. She's not doing anything.
Has she done anything? This woman is probably the biggest disappointment. You know, you can have your issues with Busisiwe Mkhwebane, but at least she has done something. She's done some stupid and awful and useless things. But Shamila Batoi, show me something that this woman has done in the years and the months that we've been paying her. Nothing. Zero.
I will remind you and Kenton telling me when I said Shamila is going to be a lame duck, I will remind you of you guys saying, give her a chance.
No, you're right.
She hasn't been.
No, give Cyril Ramaphosa a chance. Give everybody a chance. We're a country that gives people a chance, that they go on and on and on, delivering to the people of South Africa. I think Shamila needs to act. Look at all the stuff that's come out of the commission. Even Deputy Justice Zondo stood up one day and said, but you know, the NPA doesn't have to wait for us to finish. They can use the evidence coming out of here to go after people. Have they gone after anybody? No, it's all the little guys. You know,
maybe what we need to do is threaten Shamila Batoi with arrest for inaction in office, and maybe something will happen.
I think the biggest problems is that these people are appointed by the same politicians who must
be held to account,
who end up being the ones in trouble. I mean, I don't know what was said to Shamila Batoi. You know, they could have played the line, you know, you don't go after this one and this one because it might create instability in the country. And maybe she's playing that. I don't know. I'm speculating. But the fact is, we need to create more independence in these structures so that they're not beholden to any political player. Because people could go rogue. I could come in as president tomorrow being a nice guy, and then I start going rogue on South Africa. If I appointed people, my own people, in these key structures, they're going to play my game.
Pums, what do you reckon
if you got a job and came to work every day for 1,000 days and had nothing to show for it, guarantee you'd be fired from
here. I would fire you if you worked for me. Get out of here. Show me something. But in South Africa,
yes, here we are, as the South African population, as the voting population, not voting people out of their jobs. Which then, we've got elections coming up. I know it's only local elections. I'm interested to know, Soggy, who you would put your money on. Mashaba, Musi's independence, the DA, the EFF, or the ANC?
or definitely not the ANC, and definitely not the EFF. And let's just assume first that we will have elections. Something tells me that the ANC and the EFF are in cahoots together to make sure that elections don't happen this year. For all the reasons we know, they know that their popularity ratings are not good right now, and the ANC has not forgotten the kick in the butt that it got in 2016. That's right. Mm-hmm. So they're going to use COVID as an excuse to prevent other people from meeting. But okay, if the elections happen, of course, I will support people like Maimani, Mashaba, people who are progressive, who are trying to do something different. I will not forget support anyone who's been sitting there enjoying their big salaries with their two people. We need new thinking in Parliament. The only way to change South Africa is to put voices in there that are going to work for South Africa, not for sales. And we don't want racist parties in there. Whether we like it or not, South Africa is and will always be a diverse country. All of us belong. Anyone who goes there to say South Africa is only for colors or for blacks or for whites, but doesn't belong to be in there, I'm sorry, it's never going to work.
So does that take Mashaba out of the running?
But I really think what needs to happen is, you know, the ANC came into power. People forget the ANC came into power thanks to the organizational force of the United Democratic Front, the SDF. It's no longer there. It was a formation of many, many different bodies. What South Africans need to do, they need to unite, okay, and take the ANC out. That's the only way they can take it out. Once, with all these little parties, everybody, I mean, Mashaba is only contesting three municipalities in Gauteng, Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, and Johannesburg. It's not going to change much, but if he wins, that's good. But what you need is more people to come together. And people must stop thinking that you have to be president to change things. They need to unite and then take the whole country away from the ANC. Just unite and agree on what needs to happen.
I'm going to stand up for Pumi again. She always says we don't need to wait for the politicians. We can do these things ourselves, and we can start to influence things in our own communities. And we have to, but it's hard, and it requires huge amounts of time and effort and hard work. Before we get too much into the reads around this, Lucy wants to know, and I think this is a great question, because Sully, you also pay a huge amount of attention to the economy. Any comments on Tito Mboweni's AG report of 240 million in irregular expenditure?
I'm disappointed in Tito Mboweni. Tito Mboweni is the other person in the ANC that people thought, oh, maybe that one should be president. He's a nice guy. He doesn't think like them. But actually, in more recent and months, he has become hardcore ANC just like everybody else. I mean, he's shown the middle finger to South Africa many times. There's corruption. Something has to be done about these things. Is he going to be to play a role? I'm not sure. I think there comes a time when they're too much into the system, they forget that they're there for South Africa, and they think they're there for the ANC to save their party. That's exactly what the GOP is doing in America. They think the GOP comes first, and that's wrong. The ANC doesn't come first. Tito Mboweni is doing the same thing.
Please, can I read you Tito Mboweni's tweet from last night?
Yes.
I was gobsmacked. So many people are saying so many different things at the ANC, which is at every turn just ridiculous. His tweet last night.
Yes.
At the core of all this, first, the majority, not all, of white South Africans seem at face value to still view black people as hewers of wood and drawers of water, equal servants. At the core of all this is the question of race, class, gender, and power. The colonialism of a special type will take long resolve. Remember that the majority, not all, white people thought of themselves as the civilizing contingent into Africa. Emphasis is on not all. This guy is failing to put a handle on the economy, and what he's doing is he's distracting us by race baiting and class.
But he's also saying to those people who attended the Tea Party last week, I'm not such a bad guy, you know, in case you guys take over next year, I could play with you. He's playing exactly. At the core of the South Africa's problems is the ANC.
I'd agree with Tracy. I think he was drunk tweeting.
Probably. I mean, listen, that is obviously such a distraction. But do you think people still fall for that stuff, Sully and Pumi?
Yeah,
because this is what worries me.
Look, there are people who will continue to fall for it. Look at all those people who still support, all these, you know, implicated people, Zuma, Martin, and but I think that we mustn't underestimate South Africans. If you think, if you look at what happened in 2016, the ANC was kicked out of three big metros, all right? Mm-hmm. People do get hurtful. And when they do get hurtful, they will kick the ANC in the butt again. That's why the ANC and the EFF are happy to postpone the elections. It's not because of white people. It's because black people are saying, wait a minute, it's enough. Enough is enough. Okay, people will kick them out. One by, little by little, and we need to keep an eye on the IEC. The IEC, I don't believe it's as independent as it should be. Okay, we must watch the all the processes leading to elections, during elections, after the elections. South Africans mustn't blindly think that the IEC is not employed by the ANC, because it is.
Yeah,
I do think that there are seismic shifts, though, in the political landscape of South Africa, and I think we're going to see the emergence of a new force and a third way of doing something. The space is ripe for a political party that is centrist. So, you know, a Clinton-esque way of politics. So don't make enemies with anyone. Just bring everyone along for a better South Africa. There's space.
I totally agree with you, Pumi. The space is fertile and it's going to happen. Okay, there's no doubt about it. But people must remember that when you come in there, you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for South Africa. Okay. The minute you go in there thinking that you're going to save your political party, it's all about you, then you're not the right person. South Africa needs leadership. South Africa needs unity. There's too much pain in this country. Even COVID-19 restrictions, some of which have been really unreasonable, have killed lots of businesses. There would have been opportunities for government to do things differently. It didn't. Okay? And there's too much, I don't know what's going on, there's too much foreign influence into the ANC. I don't know where, maybe they're getting money from some people, they're beholden to those people, I have no idea. But what is fact for me is that the ANC no longer acts up for South Africa. What's good for the ANC is not good for South Africa. And what's good for South Africa is not good for the ANC.
At the risk of us going around in circles here, I do think that it's probably worth mentioning that most the average South African is worse off at the moment than they have been for a very, very long time, even worse off than they were at the beginning of our democracy, which was a tough time, and especially economically for many people. There are lots of people who've gained over the last while, and those people will be fine if they manage their money properly. But many South Africans are on the bones of their backsides because of COVID, because of mass unemployment, and now even more unemployment than ever before. The business community, if you can even call it that, is so fractured at the moment and so desperate and really clinging to life. Corporate South Africa has never done anything to stand up for the ordinary South African. Corporate South Africa has been in cahoots with government the whole time. We know that they believe they've got like a special relationship, and that ordinary old us, the employed or the small business owners, that we can really fend for ourselves. They're not particularly interested.
What's that about Nedbank's complicity?
Well, exactly. I mean, we've got all these commissions which get brushed aside because it's not as glamorous as the Zondo Commission. But we know that big business in this country has been involved in some of the much more nefarious, dodgy and dangerous things that have been happening in South Africa. But what I want to get to is this. For ordinary South Africans, they've become more dependent on the state, not less dependent, over the last while. And this is something that I'm more concerned about than whether or not people vote this way or that way. Sully and Pumi, what do you think about the fact that in some ways COVID has played directly into the ANC's playbook of crisis, opportunity, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste, and make more South Africans, particularly young unemployed South Africans, depend on the state as the only way for themselves to make a living? That's a problem.
Yeah, of course it has. It has, and the ANC just loves it. And they also love the fact that they can keep telling us, we can't gather because it's dangerous. Or maybe it's dangerous, but it's also working in their hands. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, I think the two, poverty is very dangerous for any democracy, because you can just keep people little packets of food packets, and they have nowhere else to get the food, so they rely on you, and they hopefully vote for you. But we've seen in KZN and a number of years ago when people said, you know what, it's fine. I'm going to take the food parcels for the ANC, but I'm going to vote for the other guys. So even that is possible. We hope more people will take the food parcels, but they'll know who brought them to the stage where they need food parcels to live.
Although the double-edged sword for the ANC is that because of their ineptitude, even though on the one hand people have become more dependent on the state, their ineptitude makes it difficult for them to deliver. And so that is what angers the people, because they are unable to deliver. If they were making people dependent on them and then were making sure that they get their 350 rand on time every time, that they, because of those two things, that's the double-edged sword that the ANC is in.
Right.
People are getting angrier. People are getting angrier. And what happens when people are angry, we see this in South Africa, and when economic strife also happens, there is much more of a rise in instability. There's much more of a rise in people taking to the streets, in people fighting again. We see this every single time. So that's the unfortunate place that the ANC finds itself in. And what, you know, Solly, you say that they may push out the elections and push out the elections. What the elections tend to do is they're like a pressure valve, right? So people feel like they have an opportunity to say something, to do something, to change things. So it's a pressure valve that just opens up the pressure a little bit, right? And if they don't get the elections and they continue to be sliding downhill, we've got 30 million people in South Africa who live on less than 20 rand a day.
Yeah.
Those people are hungry and those people are angry.
Bloody right.
They know exactly who to direct their anger at. So I don't think it's
working. Well, you know, I like to say, and I don't like to say this, but I say this more and more, that if South Africa could be liberated from apartheid, South Africa can be liberated from the ANC, because the ANC is not... It doesn't care for about South Africans anymore. It cares about itself. And as you say, everything you're saying, what we really need is a voice of credibility that's going to stand up and say, you don't have to be worried about the ANC using race as bait to keep people around it. We need a voice that can gather South Africans, as you said, a voice in the center, a voice that will be credible, that will attract people from across the country. Because when we are great, South Africans, when we do things together, we are great. And the potential that lies in us is massive. It just needs to be channeled in the right way, in a productive way. And in the absence of that voice, even the Tito Mboweni's of this world are coming to use the race. Yeah. You can't keep blaming the white minority for the problems that the ANC is responsible for over and over and over again. Yeah. It doesn't work. It's actually tiring.
It's tiring, and it's insulting. I mean, you know, a lot of people think that just because someone is poor that they don't understand. But a lot of poor people understand far more than everybody thinks. And it's this patronizing idea that politicians and that the intelligentsia seem to apply to poor people. Oh, we know better for you than you know for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people who are subsisting on tiny amounts of money a day, and they are so good at managing themselves. They know exactly how much they have to do, where they have to go. They budget incredibly, like in ways that rich people could never understand.
Right.
They understand.
But here's the kicker.
They understand the value of work. They understand the value of the price of something which most people don't even think about when they're earning large amounts of money. And I don't think politicians completely understand how those people can turn on them on a dime. And when they do, it gets very ugly very quickly.
You know,
the kicker is you've got to do something.
Yeah.
People have got... It's an active process, this. It's not just in the voting.
Yeah.
It's in standing to be voted for. It's in standing up and putting yourself in the space. And I think what happens to a lot of South Africans is we kind of think that somebody else must do it. Somebody else must stand there. Somebody else must stand up to the politicians. There is nobody else. There is us. There is us to stand up. Because by not standing up, then we simply, all we have by default, the bad fruit wins. Simply by default, because they are the only people there standing for election.
I just want to say also, on a point that you raised earlier, both of you, I think the role that big business could play. You know, I think big business, of course, it does collude with government because they get a lot of tenders and business from government.
Mm.
But they seem to underestimate the power they have of influence over government. I mean, they keep giving money to government through the Solidarity Fund and that sort of thing. They should be saying to government, we're happy to put money on the table. We have money to invest into the economy, but here are the conditions. If you don't do this first, let's speak for South Africa. It's just worried about itself. It's not worried about where the country is going. It's happened before. It's happening now. And that's unfortunate.
I think you're asking people who don't have any courage to have some courage. They don't. Most of them are feathering their own nests.
But also those solidarity funds.
Yeah.
All these funds are just PR exercises.
Correct.
They really are just PR exercises.
Of course.
Because all that they've done, all these companies that stood up to say they're investing this amount of money, all that they did was they took whatever capital expenditure was already in their plans.
It's nothing new. A lot of things are just to look good in the face of government.
It was not because they were doing it to assist government it's the capital expenditure that they had always allocated for those projects. Right. And they've just simply put them up to say, well, we're doing this project for the country, and they are not.
Right.
All those funds are PR exercises, both for the president and the companies.
But the government knows that. All the government wants is to show a spreadsheet of pledges. You know, so and so has pledged so much. They're going to do this. Mm. That's what that's for them. That's the deliver. After every investment conference, they come back and say, you see, there's a lot of money that's being pledged, and it's exactly what we just described for me. But a lot of it will not be thrown into the market until they are sure it's. But those business people also have their own shareholders to account to. They're not going to throw money because the ANC says throw the money in there. They have to be very careful.
And also,
the ANC needs to create conditions.
Aren't you in dereliction of duty as a businessman or as a shareholder, as an owner of a business, if you allow the ANC to manage that money? Surely that would show that you actually don't take your job terribly seriously
That's a very interesting point. I think that, well, we don't know what happens behind the corridors of corporate world when these things happen. That's why I think people are easy to pledge, but they don't to release the funds is a different thing. You can pledge and say, over the next 2, 3, 4 years, we want to do X, Y, Z. But to release those funds, you need to have a strong business case inside your own business to say, well, can we now or can we not? I think that a lot of people are holding on to money, but they're not going to put it into the market until they know that, you know, there's sufficient stability for them to see far ahead.
You can't blame them. I mean, to trust this government with your money is that's the stupidest thing you could do right now. Okay, so where to from here in terms of how to restart the economy? Let's have some ideas, because obviously, with lockdown easing off, and we seem to have hit our spike now, and, you know, there's the promise of vaccines on the horizon, although that's been managed so badly already. Where do we start first, Solly? I know this is something you're very passionate about. The economy needs to be let loose. It needs to be unbridled so that people can get out there. We have entrepreneurs. We have people who have a tremendous understanding of the street, whether it's in townships or whether it's in boardrooms, and these people need to be allowed to do business. Government must get out of the way, or do you think it's much, much more complicated than that?
The government has been promising some economic reforms. Those economic reforms have not happened. The investor world is waiting for those reforms to be made.
Are you talking about labor reforms? What kind of reforms are you talking about in particular?
Including the labor reform, to make it easy for business to operate, to unbridle, to make it easy for foreign investors to put money into the economy. The government has to come up with those reforms. It hasn't. But the biggest problem now is also the electricity supply. We know that it's become clear that, first of all, Eskom needs to be unbundled. Okay, the president has been making those promises, but there are people within ANC who are opposed to it. They think, if he does that, it means that he wants to sell part of Eskom to his white friends, to his rupets and other people out there. That's so. Oh, the poor man is like, okay, I can't act now because I'm being accused of trying to give these state-owned enterprises to white people. But we need more generation capacity in South Africa, and we need to allow as much space as possible for the renewable energy guys, suppliers to come into the market. We know that the latest integrated resources plan allows that, makes room for that. But there are also rumors that Guatemantashe is not making it easy for them to unlock it, to make it happen. Because what the ANC wants to do is, well, if we're going to make that happen, we must make sure that we have enough comrades to benefit from whatever opportunities come out of that. But there are people who've been waiting, who are ready to supply electricity through all sorts of renewable sources. But the ANC is not, the ANC government is not allowing that to happen, and it's frustrating. If you can't open a big smelter in South Africa if you're not sure that you're going to have the electricity you need to keep it running constantly.
Fumi, what do you think? Economy, where do we start?
You know, I think South Africans are incredible people. I think South African business entrepreneurs, South African entrepreneurs have incredible ideas. We just have to throw off the shackles of fear. I think South Africans are still very afraid of the government because we have been brutalized by the government in the past. But I think now is the time to actually disregard the government and do what you need to create your own wealth, to create a business around you. Oh, you know, we've got 25 million people that are unemployed.
Yeah.
And if we could get more small businesses that employ two or three people, you know, you start to make a dent in that.
Right.
But the problem is most South Africans are so compliant. You want to, you know, you must register, you must do this, you must do that. Maybe what we need is we need to kind of informalize and have a throng of informalized businesses that don't rely on government. You're not going to take the 30 days to register your company. Just do the job. Do the job, do the work, get your pay. You know, I think we need to stop being afraid of the government.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, but unfortunately, you know, they put so much red tape in the way that it becomes well nigh impossible to do this. And now they're implementing all kinds of new restrictions, which make it even harder for people to, first of all, open up a business, second of all, comply, third of all, there are no tax breaks, fourth of all, the employment rules are so strict that
that's why we must find a way around them.
Yeah, well, you mean just to break the law, basically. Is that what you're saying?
No, I wouldn't encourage people to break the law. What I would encourage people is to stand firm together and insist on those restrictions to be taken out. Government needs to, there are many things that, if you look at the economy, the tourism and broader hospitality sector, for instance, there are awesome people in those sectors who have been suggesting to government how things could be done without endangering people. But government doesn't listen. I think that
takes government, too long.
No, government has this Soviet era kind of way of thinking that is stifling business. People, as you say, South Africans are entrepreneurial. They would like to get things done. There are awesome initiatives, awesome minds in here. People who have a little money that could go far. But government says, no, you can't do this. Why? Because
rules or whatever.
I will remind you of the taxi industry in this country that started out as an illegal and informal business.
Right.
And they are currently the biggest operator of public transportation. And the government
but they must
has
pay
to bring
taxes.
Them to the table. Yeah, but
they must pay their taxes.
But now they do, right? But they started out informal, they started out illegal, and now they are a force to be reckoned with. And I think that's what I mean by saying we have to find ways to work around it and become a force that is, for the government, unignorable.
The thing is, the minute we become a lawless country, we can't pull it back again.
I mean, we're already a lawless country.
I think I agree with Pumi, Sully. I really do. I mean, you know, we can't even prosecute people who have appeared in front of the State Capture Commission, and we have all the available evidence to be able to start arresting and processing these people, and we're not. You brought it up yourself.
That's very sad.
We are already a lawless country, so why comply with the law anymore? I would like to say, and again, you've got to tread very carefully here, because this kind of talk is seditious in some circles. But I think we have a very useful tool at our disposal, which we need to find a way to wrangle better and to turn into a weapon against government. And that is tax money. I mean, already because of the mismanagement of the economy and COVID and everything associated with that, there is going to be a huge gap in the fiscus this year. I don't know how Tito Mboweni, whether he's drunk tweeting or blaming white people or whatever he's doing at the moment, I don't know how he's going to make the books balance, because people are not going to, they're not going to need to lie about their taxes. Their taxes are going to have to be zero because they've made losses. Most businesses have gone out of business. Most people have found themselves with less money now than ever before. So it's not about trying to be tax evasive or tax avoid, you know, trying to avoid tax. This is going to be a reality that we all have to deal with. If you cannot pay your taxes because you don't have a business anymore, guess whose pocket that hits? Governments.
The tax base has already shrunk. I mean, our economy today is smaller than the economy of Pakistan.
Pakistan. Yeah.
Which?
Okay. That's how much our economy has shrunk. So.
The tax base has been shrinking over many years. For a combination of things. Of course, COVID-19 has added to those problems. A lot of people used to be happy to pay their taxes to government because they believed the money was being used for the right things. It was their way of giving back, of contributing to the development of post-apartheid South Africa. But the minute people started realizing that, wait a minute, the money is not going where it's supposed to go, or that the crooks linked to politicians are allowed to get away without paying their shares, because that's what happened under Tom Moyano, especially.
Yes.
People start saying, why should I give my hard-earned cash to a government that is run by thieves?
Correct.
Or a government that doesn't treat all taxpayers the same way.
In fact, if you do give a government that is run by thieves your tax money, you're actually an accessory to the crime.
Exactly. So people are saying, I'm not going to do that anymore. So people have been finding smart ways. Those who could take their money out of the country have done so. Those who could find smart ways to stay within the law but to pay as little as possible, they have also done so. But now over COVID-19, as Carol says, absolutely true. People don't have the money to pay anymore. So it's going to get less and less. This year is going to be worse than the year before.
Well,
Tito knows that. He's not going to reach his revenue collection targets.
As Pumi says, let's make it even more difficult for them. Why must we comply? Wherever you can, find ways to screw government. I think it should be on everyone's agenda at the moment. It should be a serious point of interest.
But the reality, though, is that just, you know, out-politicking each other on platforms like this and at dinner parties and over wine is not going to change a damn thing. We have to act. What are you laughing at, Garrett?
You're right. I'm not going to argue with you.
We have... South Africa will never work if we don't work. So we have to work at it, and we have to work for it. We can't just sit back and think that somebody else will do it.
All right.
It's, you know, all our
responsibility. I must say one thing quickly. You know, this conversation is a painful conversation, because it's a conversation I never, ever thought I could ever have about South Africa. I never thought. I used to look at other countries and think, God, look at what's going on there. Mm. And we're having those conversations here about the Republic of South Africa. It's really painful.
I want to quickly go to some comments. Tracy makes a good point, and let's just remember that there are sometimes moments to pause and take in our history. And maybe this is a glimmer of hope for some of us. But today was the day 31 years ago that Nelson Mandela walked out of Victor Verster Prison. And Tracy says she remembers it like yesterday, 31 years ago. Andre says the ANC was already corrupt under Mandela's leadership, but just at a smaller scale. I think governments all over the world are corrupt, but it does depend on scale. And we've certainly not got better. We've got worse. Baldwin says, a handful of people that I know who applied for food parcels from the beginning of lockdown haven't even got a single tin of fish. But we do see the not-for-sale items in spaza shops. Mm. Yeah, good point, Baldwin. Then Andre says, the gullibility of the poor is the same. The gullibility of the poor earns them their right to poverty. I think that's very, very cruel.
That's nonsense.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. In fact, I know I don't agree with that. A lot of people saying, Pumi, I pray you're right. And Tracy says, Tito was obviously drunk tweeting, which we've covered. Raleigh says, who controls the flow of information gathered by Jay-Z's and special investigators? Well, this is a thing that you Pums, have been paying careful attention to the Zondo Commission. And I know that there have been a number of things revealed and released in the last couple of weeks, which, as Sully has said, is the ANC airing its dirty laundry. Is there anything noteworthy that we need to be especially aware of coming out of the Zondo Commission?
Well, I mean, the most recent revelations about the shenanigans in the State Security Agency are really, really scary. Worrisome. And I obviously, we've seen the attempts by the minister and others to try and, you know, control the extent of the revelations in there, but we know enough already. Actually, some of us have known these things have been happening. Here in Cape Town, I won't mention names, there's a BMW a company that sells cars.
Mm.
That information that we know is that it was purchased by the State Security Agency, and the reason for buying that dealership is a dealership was so that the spies don't need to drive the same car every day. So they bought into the dealership. It's still there.
You are joking.
I mean, it's crazy stuff. It's, I mean, a lot of our money has been used to. I mean, Zuma was paid at some point $2.5 million rents every month. I mean, what did he do with that money?
When you even bring up numbers in Zuma, I start to laugh because I don't think he even knows how much.
So I think, you know what, I really would have wanted the state, and we interviewed in our Soli and Gauta episode not long ago, Tulima Donsela, and asked him, would you have, in hindsight, would you have maybe ordered that the money be put into the NPA and not into a commission that's just really a comedy, a soap opera?
Well,
and she said, well, you know, in those days, the NPA was so compromised, it would not have worked. And the thing is also the commission, as we see it now, its mandate has been broadened way beyond what she wanted it to be, to focus on state capture. But now it's everything that went wrong, which is fine. But the problem is that it's taking longer and we're all just being entertained. We're also becoming blasé in the process.
The NPA is still compromised, I hate to say. So
of course it is.
She was right then and she will be right going forward. All right.
Everything that's CADA inflicted is compromised, for sure.
All right, so final thoughts from you, Sully, because Pumi and I get to do this every week. We're very pleased that you managed to make it today, but is there anything you want to leave us with before you go?
Look, I just hope that something happens, that centrist party happens, or information. I hope the Southerners wake up to the madness of race being thrown at us as the problem that is at the core of our country. Race is not at the core of our country. People must wake up. We know that the only other time when South Africa was not governed by the ANC, it was a painful place for black people, but South Africa can still not be governed by the ANC and be a good place for South Africa and for all of us. We need to wake up.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I mean, I hope we can move past that, because that stuff is really holding many of us back. And it's doing nothing to help with social cohesion or anything of that like. Pums, any final words from you?
We can do it, guys. We have 60 million amazing brains in this country, and we're not going to be held ransom by 400 terrible people.
I love it. All right, that makes me feel better. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. It was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, Sully. Nice to have you on. The Burning Platform is brought to you every week by Nando's, and you can find the podcast on cliffcentral.com. Thank you for being part of the show this morning. And if you want to join in the conversation, if you have any suggestions for us, maybe someone who you want us to talk to on the show, if there's somebody whose article you read recently, if there's someone you met at a dinner party or on Zoom or anywhere else and you want us to talk to them, then let us know, gareth@cliffcentral.com. We want to hear your ideas and your suggestions so that we can get a comprehensive view of the madness that is happening and that is unfolding all around us. Pums, thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early.
Cliffcentral.com.